were living a perfectly normal life until my son developed a lump in his neck, and I took him to the doctor. He was 13, and I took him on Friday, and when he went in, he had a pea-sized lump, and the doctor said he didn't like it. He wanted to biopsy it, and he set up he scheduled it for the following Monday. By Monday, it was the size of a golf ball, and they removed it, and that night he called me, and he said, "Carmen, it doesn't look good," and he was crying. And he told me it was non-Hodgkin's at first, which meant he would be dead in 6 months.
The movie depicted a much different story than what really happens. You know, there were no bodies in the law. You know, there was no family that was having seances and trying to raise the dead. There was no ectoplasm. There were no eyelids in a box.
There are no known stories about cadaver mutilation made for a good movie, but really did not match up with real life.
There was a reality to the haunting in Connecticut, just a little bit different than how the movie portrayed it.
Of you who have never been here, and this is the final episode of the year, which means I really wanted to talk about one of my favorite things, ghosts. I want to talk about the true story behind the absolutely terrifying events of the movie The Haunting in Connecticut, aka the Snedeker family. You see, in 1986, what's up, same year I was born, what, in the butt, sorry about that. The Snedeker family moved into their new home in Southington, Connecticut. Within just 2 years, the family would run screaming from the house, telling stories to anyone who would listen about extremely shocking paranormal events. The true story for us begins in 1986 when the family moved into this historic home at 208 Meridian Avenue. At the time, they were desperately seeking a house to rent in the area for their son, Philip. He had recently been diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma and needed to receive treatment at the nearby hospital. This house they found right there on Meridian Avenue seemed like the perfect fit. It was so perfect with its extremely low, kind of suspicious low price and size, but they needed it, so they moved right in, like practically in a rush. At first, they felt really lucky that they had found this massive, beautiful house on such grand property and so close to the hospital they had to go to practically every day. However, this dream quickly turned into a nightmare. The family said almost instantly they began to experience paranormal activity. They reported seeing and hearing unknown forces and being attacked while they sleep and even experiencing extremely violent personality changes. Now, the story told by Hollywood is different than the one I have for you now. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and ghouls, this is the true story behind the haunting in Connecticut.
We lived in New York at the time, and my mom was having to transport my brother back and forth to his chemo, and we kind of had a live-in babysitter while my mom and my dad were taking him to the hospital and getting his treatments and stuff.
I remember my brother was really sick. You know, at the time, I didn't have an inkling of how sick he really was.
There were times when I was alone when he was in the hospital. The nerves were so raw, but being the mother of four, you can't allow things to defeat you. Because it's not just yourself you're fighting for.
Before we begin, if you don't mind, I'd like to be vulnerable with you and just open. You're here for my content, and I want to share with you why I am creating this episode for you today. If you're not interested, then fast forward and get to the spooky stuff. But if you're curious and you want to know a little bit about the person behind the content, well, let me share something with you. Recently, my life has changed drastically. And you know, there's something to be said about that because it happens often to everybody on a daily basis. You see, there's no promises in this life. Nobody's promised you tomorrow. Nobody's promised you 10 minutes from now. Nobody's promised you even a second. Boom, one of you could be gone. Okay, that's a little dramatic, but also kind of could be true. The fact is, anything can happen in the blink of an eye. And even more scary, I'm gonna put some science behind that. If you live in America, I wanna talk about cancer for a moment. Because in our story today, cancer is heavily involved, and that's why I chose it. In America, as of 2023, apparently, one in every two of us will deal with, battle, fight, or face, if not die, from cancer. Don't worry, chances are, if you're alone right now and you're listening to this, it's me. Because I recently was taken out of remission for cancer. After 9 years, a PET scan showed that my scans are no longer clean. What does that mean? I do not know. And don't worry, I'm not sharing this with you because I want pity. No, I'm not here talking about woe is me. Don't even know what's going on right now inside of me. I just know it's happened very fast and I'm fucking scared. However, I'm still breathing, I'm still alive, I feel fantastic. Oh, today I do. Some days I can't get out of bed and I'm hurting real bad. But the same goes for a lot of the people in our story today because cancer was heavily involved and there were days for them that they didn't know what was going to happen next. It all happened fast, quickly, and taking cancer and throwing in ghosts is just fucking brutal. I could not imagine A, as the person going through cancer, being haunted and plagued by terrifying events. Whether you're a skeptic or not, could you just imagine living in a house that shit was going on that you couldn't fucking explain? No, probably not. Imagine being sick as well and thinking, oh, I'm just having hallucinations, which is also probably terrifying. And if you've never been in the medical world where you have to take medicine to help battle things, believe me, hallucinations do happen. You are warned of side effects that are downright scary. But then to have to share with people that you're experiencing things and then find out maybe they were experiencing things as well because, you know, hey, you're living in an actually haunted home. I don't know. This whole story is not just really heartbreaking because the cancer factor, but it's absolutely terrifying because of the ghost factor. So if you don't know me, hi, I'm fucking weird. I love ghosts. I love paranormal. I love things that are spooky. I love stuff that makes you go, what the fuck? Because honestly, our world is fucking weird. It's weird as shit. We are meat suits powered by electricity that has feelings. Oh, also, I don't know if you got the memo. We're living on a floating rock in the middle of a vacuum of abyss that we still don't even comprehend, okay? And apparently, we're alone, which is even more terrifying, but also probably not because we don't know what the fuck is out there. So, putting all that aside, let's add in the mix that there may be some other, like, entities out there called ghosts. Yeah. We don't know because there is something called parascience because there is stuff out there that's above the norm, just out of the realm of what we can comprehend. I felt like I got a little bit of Zach Baggins there. Understand. My bad. Anyways, this story is scary and heart-wrenching. Also, I heavily just resonate with it because I deal with a lot of my own creepy paranormal shit, and if you don't believe that, that's cool. You can be a skeptic. That's fine! I wish I could be. However, it also hits home because of the fucking medical cancer aspect. I have started this journey, and I've only been in it for a few weeks, and it's already just taken its toll on me. So I wanted to share a story that I just really connected with. I don't know, on many fronts, and lately, I've been pretty mentally just numb and not feeling like creating, and I've been really, really depressed. And this was the first story in a while that kind of gave me something, and I actually felt like telling you guys about it, so I hope you enjoy it. Okay, enough. Let's begin. Also, if you listen to all of this right here, thanks. I really appreciate you, whoever you are.
He was very nauseated after the treatments, and then the traveling made it worse. And he wasn't eating regularly, so he was dropping weight extremely quick. And I was afraid that the trip and the treatments were going to kill him before the cancer had a chance to.
You know, they were just a blue-collar family trying to make it. And it was pretty expensive from what we remember, and I just needed to get closer to where he could have his treatments.
So I discussed it with my husband, and we decided to rent a place in Connecticut closer to the hospital where he was being treated. And in doing so, I was having trouble finding a place that would rent to four children. I had passed an old colonial with a for rent sign. Well, I stopped and I went upstairs and looked around, and it was a very nice house. I was impressed. I didn't think there was any way I could afford it. And I contacted the landlord, and it was affordable. He agreed to rent to me, and I was ecstatic. And we went home and got prepared to move.
Story really begins. The Snedeker family were just like any other middle-class American family in the 1980s, at least. Which meant they were a pretty hefty-sized family. They were comprised of Carmen Reed, her husband Alan Snedeker, and their four children. Those would be Philip, Bradley, Alan Jr., and Jennifer. They also had Carmen's niece Tammy living with them as well, so a pretty hefty group of humans. Sadly, at a rather young age though, Philip would be diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. Hodgkin's lymphoma is a type of cancer that affects the lymphatic system, which is part of the body's germ-fighting immune system. In Hodgkin's lymphoma, and I know a lot because I've been having to read a lot about cancer recently due to certain diagnoses and things popping up on my scans. In Hodgkin's lymphoma, white blood cells called lymphocytes grow out of control, causing swollen lymph nodes and growths all throughout the body. More often than not, 93% of people who are diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma have a survival rate of around 5 years. Please note that in every case of cancer, it is different. I'm just sharing a statistic. Now, because of Philip's diagnosis, the Snedeker family often had to travel a rather long distance to get to the hospital in which his treatment would occur. Eventually, the family decided they should try to move closer to the hospital because gas, expenses, all of the traveling, and it was a lot on Philip. He would get violently ill, he'd be nauseous, in so much pain, and his mother, Carmen, just really hated seeing him like that. She wanted to be able to take him to his treatments, get him home, and get him resting as fast as possible. Not to mention the expenses. They were really spending a lot. Already, it cost a ton. If you have insurance in America, to battle cancer is still outrageous. I know, believe me, I've already spent thousands and I'm only like a few weeks technically in this. And I'm fully insured, I'm 94% insured through the system, so I'm only covering like a little bit of the bill, and it's expensive as shit. The search began, and they looked for a rather large home, at least one big enough to house as many people that they had, while also falling within a budget that they could afford without drowning in debt, at least the debt that was already occurring, that was already drowning them. They didn't want to add to it. That is what led them to a 5-bedroom, 2-bathroom house, which provided plenty of space, and they decided to move in rather kind of excitedly on June 30th of 1986. This is when they signed the lease and made the home theirs. Home sweet haunted home.
The house across the street used to be Hallahan Funeral Home. It was Hallahan Funeral Home when we moved in, and has been since the 30s, maybe earlier.
The Hallahan family owned the house as long as I could remember. They had the funeral home. They lived upstairs. Very, very nice people.
Well, I worked in all the funeral homes in Southington at some point in time. I'd get a call to go in and do a corpse's hair and makeup.
He needed help occasionally to go retrieve bodies from the hospital morgue. And he came over once in a while when I was around, and he asked if I could take a ride with him in the hearse to go pick a body up in the morgue.
Now, the audios you're hearing, for the most part, you're probably like, who the fuck is Matt? And why is Harmony saying Philip? That's because in a lot of the reports, it's Philip Snedeker because that's his name. However, in the movie and in a few documentaries and early on, they were the Campbells. Well, there were Ask me why I have a podcast when I can't do words. They were monikers. We're going to go with a completely different term because words are tough. From all reports, the move-in process for the family seemed really easy and seamless. The children picked their bedrooms with really little minimal fights and arguments. They all got moved in and settled really smoothly, no real big issues. Everything kind of seemed normal until Carmen made a really fucking creepy and disturbing discovery. Before I tell you what that discovery is, I want to tell you about when she toured the place with the landlord. When she originally toured the place, she couldn't get into the basement because there were renovations going on and they had sealed it off. She just assumed it was a regular, normal basement. Well, as they're moving in, she enters the basement and finds a very creepy discovery. Laying around some dusty boxes and old furniture, there are funerary items. They started to find some embalming equipment and a few other necessary, you know, like things you would need to run a mortuary. Not exactly something you would come into contact with in like a normal house today. Like, I've never walked into an apartment and been like, I like that blood pit. Yeah, this is a really nice embalming room. I really love it. Oh my god, a coffin display case? Beautiful. Carmen, who said she did tour the house originally with the homeowner, Daryl Kern, you know, he had it blocked off because of the renovations. She told an interview in 2002 that she didn't get to go in. However, in 1992, Daryl Kern said that's not true. Technically, she actually knew it was a funeral home. I disclosed it to her. So I don't know who's telling the truth there. Nonetheless, the fact remains the property was once a funeral home. It was the Hallahan Funeral Home and had been in operation for decades. Now, this disturbing fact and discovery, yeah, this didn't stop the Snedeker's boys from making the basement where they slept at night. Oh my god, huh, that's so creepy. Look, I love a good spooky place. I love, you know, trying to go and get the Jesus scared out of me because I want to know about ghosts. Don't laugh, okay? Okay, I'm a spooky lady. I like strange shit. But I am not going to sleep at night in a place that I could wake up and see something staring at me. Fuck. No, I'm good. Thank you. Hard pass. Also, not gonna lie, it has happened though. I've had scary things happen in my life, okay? But I don't wanna like tempt fate. If you follow me on social media, especially TikTok, you can actively see way back some videos where I caught some of the most terrifying things because randomly real creepy shit just happens around me. So anyways, back to this. These boys decide that this is where their bedroom's gonna be, and the oldest are Philip and Bradley. This was going to be their private space, and this place was massive, especially compared to the other rooms upstairs. They had a whole floor, which was, you know, just it was the basement, but it was the size of the rest of the house's floors and had a lot less walls of separation, I guess. So in where they would have the other choices upstairs, they would have a lot smaller space, and they decided, hey, we're teenage boys. We just want to have our own area. And the parents were like, yo, if you're cool sleeping in a real fucking creepy area, I mean, yeah, do each their own. Philip and Bradley would actually reportedly sleep in the casket display room. Oh, that's so, I don't think so. I'm good. No. However, I think it's better than the other option, which was just down the hall, and it was the embalming room, complete with a real blood pit. So, I think they made the right choice, right? Yeah. She said, laughing uncomfortably. Now, in addition to mortuary equipment that they found, the Snedekers also stumbled upon some really disturbing images. They found pictures of the deceased that had been taken on the property. Carmen had stated that there were a couple of photos in the home, and there were also some toe tags and head tags. She even went on record stating that they found personal items of those who had been, you know, deceased. I will clear the record, though. Compared to the film, this is a lot less creepy. It's still freaking, I don't want to, like, find that kind of shit in my house. Now, okay, she said that she found toe tags and head tags and photos and personal items, which that's creepy as can be. However, this isn't as scary as the film, because in the film, they found bodies of the dead in the walls. So, I mean, I would definitely take the toe tags, the head tags, and the personal items, and even the photos over the bodies, you know, because no, I'm good. I would have nightmares, trauma forever and ever. I don't think I would ever leave a catatonic state, especially when compared to in the movie, how those bodies just fall on people, because, ew, no, didn't, nope, just sign me out of life right there, expired. Wait, is that an inappropriate joke to use when, I'm talking about the dead? Anyways, let's go to the next segment.
He told me that, and I was concerned, knowing what was going on to his head and neck, that the medication, the treatments, were causing him some mental issues.
When we first moved in the house, it was pretty much the same way it was when we lived in New York. Me and my brother got along great, you know, the family got along great, and me and my brother started telling my parents stuff that was happening in the house, and my parents didn't believe us, and my dad would get mad at my older brother, saying that he was putting stuff into our heads. And my brother started to get a little bit more withdrawn as we lived there longer, because he was seeing more and it was affecting him a lot more than it was affecting me.
He had a journal or a notebook that he would write poems and letters and notes, and just he would jot anything down. And a lot of it was really dark and enough to make me go to my Aunt Carm in regards and worry. Within weeks of being there, I was already pretty upset and worried that Matt was not doing well.
Now I want to tell you guys about the absolutely terrifying aspects of what the Snedeker family experienced in that house. The Snedeker family is already going through their own personal hell, terrified for Philip and what he's experiencing. Now let's go ahead and throw in some paranormal activity to really ramp it up. The paranormal activity in the home started the very night the family moved in. However, the only person affected that night was Philip. According to an interview with People magazine, Carmen told them, quote, "My son started seeing this young man with long black hair down all the way to his hips. He would talk to my son every day. Sometimes he would threaten him. Other times he would stand there and just say his name, which was enough to scare him." Basically, the very first night they were there, Philip started seeing this guy. Initially, Philip didn't say anything because he's going through treatment. He also has swollen lymph nodes. He's got stuff going on his neck and the base of like his skull, meaning he could be having auditory and visual hallucinations and just not wanting to say anything for fear of what others are gonna say, or if he's gonna have to go to the hospital and share with them, hey, I think I'm hallucinating, because that's a whole thing. Especially if you're going through treatment for cancer, sometimes you're seeing progress from stuff they're giving you, and one of the bad side effects they warn you about starts to occur, and you don't want to say anything because you're seeing progress from a deadly disease, and you don't want to not have that progress. So he, I'm sure, was terrified. But eventually, after so many things and seeing this guy constantly, he did say something, and he wasn't the only one who was being plagued. It may have started with Philip and seemed to have focused on him, but slowly, the spooky happening started to spread throughout the family. Carmen claimed that her first incidents happened when she was mopping the floor. This whole experience is in the movie. Now, Carmen says that when she was mopping, she took the mop out of the bucket, puts the water with the mop to the ground, only for the water to not be clear, albeit probably dirty-ish water, but red, like blood. And not even just red water, but it also smelled like rotting flesh. Yummy. Love it. She said in a 2002 documentary, quote, "The mop water was red. I mean deep, deep red. It made my skin crawl. I started getting nervous that I was ruining the floor." There are more claims that have been made that occurred in this house. Carmen and her husband Alan both say that they were sexually assaulted by an unseen force. I am not here to say that did or did not happen. I am here to simply share what they stated occurred. And if that did occur, could you imagine how fucking terrifying that would be? I can't. Nope. While these unknown paranormal forces were physically tormenting the adults in the family, they seemed to take a massively deep interest in Philip. And it was only getting worse and worse. You see, Philip's personality started to shift and change. He started to become easily irritated and very reckless. He even started to inflict rather cruel punishments on his younger siblings. Now, yes, some of this could be because of his age. You know, he was getting older. He's obviously picking on his younger siblings. That's like a normal thing. I don't actually know. I don't have any siblings. But from what I have read, experienced, and seen with my friends, that's normal. Not to the degree that he takes it. We're gonna go there. Don't worry. However, there's a few things that aren't really normal as well. Like, he really does kind of become violent. And he gets really mean. I'm gonna tell you some of the things he does, and maybe this is normal, but for me, I don't feel like a sibling should do these things. In a scene that you can see in the movie, although the movie adds some ghost into the mix, what happened did actually occur. Philip, or Matt in the movie, puts his younger sibling on a gurney and starts spinning him over and over until he's screaming and begging for Philip to stop. Now, in the movie, the younger kid, Bradley, sees a ghost on the gurney. That didn't happen in real life. In real life, he was just really freaked out and was begging Philip to please stop. He doesn't want any more of that. He was really terrified. And of course, Philip was laughing. He thought it was hilarious. Another time, he locked his brother in a chest and just walked away, left him there. But probably one of the most disturbing incidents is when Philip attacked his cousin Tammy, whom, mind you, he was very close with. Because of this attack, he had to end up staying in the hospital for a psychological evaluation for 45 days, so it was pretty serious. Eventually, doctors would diagnose Philip with schizophrenia. This is because Philip was telling them about the entities that he was seeing regularly at the house. They noted that the medication he was on couldn't give him these hallucinations or trigger any dormant schizophrenic illness, which I kind of beg to differ. I don't know if you've ever checked out some of these cancer medications, but the side effects are absolutely terrifying. Now at this point in our story, before we move forward, the Snedeker family decided for them to continue to try to be okay and be this cohesive, healthy family, they needed to send Philip away. And they did. They sent Philip to live with some relatives, and reportedly, it didn't get any better. In fact, at this point, Philip began to hear voices, and he started to see spirits. With some really strong indications that there was some paranormal activity, the Snedeker family decided to reach out to Ed and Lorraine Warren. I'm sure you guys know who they are. Ed and Lorraine called out a priest to do an exorcism on the house because they believe that the house was, in fact, being possessed or haunted, inhabited, whatever you'd like to call it. On September 6th of 1988, a priest performed an exorcism on the home. The family stated that the paranormal activity did suddenly disappear. They then later moved out of the house and never returned. This supposedly marks the end of the true story of the haunting in Connecticut. But I'm not done talking about the Snedeker family and their experience. Not yet.
Carmen Snedeker. They are here with their son, Michael, and their niece, Kelly. Later in the show, we'll talk with neighbors, including one who now lives in the very same house the Snedekers claim is haunted. He says that Al and Carmen are making up the story.
With such sensational claims and stories, some people started to believe the Snedekers were lying. The family went public with their experiences prior to leaving the residence. The landlord or homeowner, Daryl Kern, in a 1992 Hartford Courant report, he stated that the paranormal activity seemed to escalate when the family was behind on the rent. That's what he noticed. Quote, "It seemed to me a scheme to make money." Even the family's neighbor, Catherine Altamas, she believed the whole thing was also a hoax. Quote, I think they had this planned right from when they moved in. She told that to a newspaper. She was just out here trashing them to the county. She also noted that the family always appeared to be jovial. If you don't know what that means cheerful. They always seemed so happy, and according to her, if they were so happy, they obviously weren't being haunted because they'd be terrified and scared all the time. She said, in fact, she never saw them acting as though they were a terrified family. Here's another thing, too. Friends of Philip, they stated as well that they didn't believe the story was true either. This is because of his personality. Quote, he was a storyteller. He always had to be the center of attention. This is what Jeffrey Poehler, who was a very close friend of Philip, told the Hartford Courant as well. 2 weeks before the Hollywood's film release in 2009, more people started to come out and talk against the family, stating that they believed it was all a hoax. That includes the brand new owner of the supposedly extremely haunted house. Quote, we lived in the house for 10 years. Our house is wonderful. That was a quote from Susan Trotta Smith. She was one of the owners in 2009, and she told NBC Connecticut, quote, this is all Hollywood foolishness. The stories are all ludicrous. To this day, people still debate whether the story behind the house and the story for Hollywood is even true. Are those spine-tingling paranormal occurrences real? I don't know, but one thing is for sure. The Snedeker family and the haunting in Connecticut will go down as one of the greatest ghost stories in American history. At least, as of yet.
Why do bad things happen to good people? Just a regular family like anybody else. We didn't ask for this, and we didn't deserve it.
It's perfect.
It's spacious and affordable. I'm just wondering, where's the catch?
Well, it does have a bit of a history.
First one upstairs, first choice of rooms!
Matt, did you find a bedroom? Down here?
It's nice and it's cool.
Everything's back there.
Mm-hmm.
These things under the floorboards.
I've seen this kid almost every day since we've been here.
You're scaring me.
We'll join the club.
So check it out. They'd held seances in this house. People not only contacted the dead, but made things appear.
There is something in this house. Something no longer living and not yet passed over.
What happened in the house?
Something evil. And it wants your son.
God, what have you done to yourself? You can't have him.
You must get out now!
Matt! I have to get my son!
Story behind the haunting in Connecticut. I hope you guys enjoyed this story, and I really wanted to share it because I love a good ghost story. And I like the fact that what Philip is going through really hits home for me right now. My schedule's been pretty messed up on here, and I'm sorry for that. I can't promise that I'll be here weekly going forward either. I will be here as much as possible to bring you new content about stories that are all filled with crime, conspiracies, and spooky happenings around the world. If you have any cases or stories that you know about and want me to look into, send me an email. You can reach out at whattheactualeffharmony@gmail.com. And if you want to be friends, because usually I do try to follow back, give me a follow on TikTok and Instagram at Oh Hey It's Harmony. But that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and ghouls, will be the end of the story for you today. And I really don't think that you guys want to sit here and listen to me babble anymore. And hey, if you do, there's plenty of other stories and episodes of What the Actual F for you to check out right now. All that said, I just want to say Happy New Year. I don't know about you, but I cannot wait to close the chapter on this year. Hey, stay safe, be well, and remember I love you. Okay, I will talk to you on the next episode of What the Actual F, which, as of tomorrow, will be next year. I love you guys. Stay safe. Bye!